You are listening to The Link, an interactive podcast hosted by public policy experts at the U.S. Oncology Network. Your link to the policy that matters most.
Great. We are back, still enjoying a lot of energy at the Community Oncology Alliance annual meeting, 2023, the largest meeting I think as COA has ever had. I think I talked to Ted and he's expecting over 1,900 people here. That's fantastic.
It's pretty amazing. And I think when they started Community Oncology Alliance, it was about 85 people about 20 years ago. And now it's grown to over 1,900. And we could have had even more people. They just couldn't house any more people here or have enough food. So it was oversold.
That's fantastic. And this is the voice. Thanks for coming back to the Link podcast. That is the voice of Dr. Moshe Chasky. We are very excited to have him join us, a new COA board member and just fresh off of one of the panels. So thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. It's nice to be here.
So we are excited. The Link podcast is a very casual conversation, typically about public policy issues, how to engage. But this is a little bit of a unique episode because we're just doing a rundown of COA. We've sat through some of the sessions. We've seen some common themes. And we're also joined by Allison Rollins, a relatively new member of the U.S. Oncology Network Government Affairs team. Are you a little bit over a year?
Yeah, I think mid-July, it will be 2 years here at the U.S. Oncology Network.
So Time flies.
I know.
Time flies.
I am Senior Government Relations Manager here at the U.S. Oncology Network. I support at the state level all of the practices, I guess, in the eastern region of the United States, and I'm privileged enough to actually support Dr. Chasky's practice in Pennsylvania.
Oh, yes. That's great. So we might put you on the spot. This will be fun.
Oh, no.
So talk to us, Dr. Chasky, about before we get to the panel discussion from today's conference, how has it been being engaged in the political process and the importance of it from the community perspective, from your market perspective, because I know you guys are going through some interesting times at Alliance.
I mean, the main issues right now, the hot button issues that we've been dealing with, obviously 340B, which has gotten a lot of traction, especially in the media as of late. And I think that it's a long-term play with 340B, but that's gotten a lot of traction. The PBMs have gotten a lot of traction right now, but I think it's extremely important, especially as the providers, that we get involved in advocacy, because the Congress people, when you go down and talk to them, they find it extremely, extremely valuable to hear directly from us, because we have direct patient care. We could tell them stories. Stories go a long way.
Yes. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. So you are fresh off of the panel. Can you give us a little... Give us a rundown. How did the panel go? How was the conversation?
The conversation, I thought, went well. They asked me to be on it. It was about the hospital conundrum, and it is a conundrum because there are practices that work very well with their hospitals, and then there are others that have had more adversarial relationships. And I just told our story, and our story is really... our story up in Bensalem. My partner, Dr. Terzian, said to me afterwards, your talk was great, and you talked about our adversarial relationship. But the truth is that there are some other parts of Alliance in the Doylestown area, in the Lankenau area on the main line, where the relationships are still okay. But in our area, we had a great relationship with the hospital, and for many, many years, really until 2019. In 2015, there was a large healthcare system that came in and took over the hospital. And I was on that merging committee, was the story that I told on the panel, and we were very well respected, and one of the reasons we allowed this healthcare system to come in was that they told us that they believed in private practice, and they believed that they could work with independent practices just like they could work with hospital-based practices. And you go fast forward a few years, and already in 2018, our hospital, which had never been a 340B entity, because we were always able to take care of the underinsured, which is even more challenging than the uninsured. And we take care of the uninsured as well. We've never said no to a patient. It was perplexing to me why they were bringing in 340B, but I knew why. And it was a financial decision from their standpoint. And they basically gave us a choice that we could either work with them and join them and be employed by them, or they were going to come up against us and build a cancer center against us, even though we were the oncology practice in their cancer center for many years, and they knew we took excellent care of our patients. But it was either you're with us or you're coming up again, or you're either with us or we're coming up against you. And that was the choice, and that all really came down to 340B. And I talked about on the discussion today on the panel, basically how emotional that is when a hospital that you've served, you know, predating me, you know, all the way back to the 1980 range, our practice has been part of the hospital, has gone all out for the community, and for a hospital to come out and do that to you gets very emotional. But I think one needs to get past the emotions when you're going through this. And because I was saying that, you know, sadness, anxiety, and anger is not a strategy. And you need to get past that and say, okay, what do we need to do here to move to the next place?
Sadness, anger, and anxiety. It's not a strategy, but it's definitely part of the journey.
It is definitely part of the journey.
So, Allison, how is this message received by policymakers?
You know, I think Dr. Chasky's comments today are incredibly well-timed, especially in the greater Philadelphia area. I think it's so important at this juncture for his region, for physicians, especially in the community oncology area, to come out and be present and to be speaking about the physician-patient relationship. Because for your community, Dr. Chasky, state legislators historically have been watching all of these mergers happen over the past decades, two decades, and really been trying to make sure that all of these financial investments in Greater Philadelphia have been maintaining access to care. But if physicians in the community do not come out and continue to explain the situation of, has this actually been the case, as financial investments into hospitals have been continuing, do we see that the patients that these hospital investments have been intended for, have they been seeing continuous care, access to care, referrals in their community, all of that sort of thing? Do they need to take buses an hour and a half from one side of the city to the other just to see one oncologist? That's not the kind of care that their state legislators were expecting. If a community oncologist is not going to see their state legislator and saying, I no longer see these patients, my patients are no longer coming to see me, I no longer have access to these hospitals, it's no longer this relationship that I used to have, your stories that you told today, I mean, it was the stories that I think everyone needed to hear and everyone needed to know, because if this happens in their community too, they needed to hear what they needed to do.
Yeah. And we didn't go into really the details of 340B, but it's true, the abuse of the program, to take, like you said, every hospital takes their impoverished hospital, like the Ben Secours of the world. So we have it in Frankfurt Hospital, which is a poor neighborhood, but the cancer center is not even there. It's not even in the poor neighborhood. The investment happens in the more affluent areas. You don't have to look further than, there's multiple places in Philadelphia which are like that. Abington, in Radnor area, same story happens again and again, that in these wealthier neighborhoods are the places where they highly invest in these places and they get 340B pricing.
So JC, I'm going to ask you in a second about maybe some activity at the federal level on 340B, because I think it's important. But before I do that, let me ask a very similar question to the one that Dr. Leyland Wilfong asked on your panel, which is, what you and I spoke throughout the entire process of the Wall Street Journal articles and the New York Times articles coming out. When you saw all three of those roll out, tell me about What were you thinking? And what was it like? I knew you were excited to kind of at least have somebody tell the story. What were you thinking when those articles started to roll out?
I thought that someone is finally paying attention, that the hospitals have such incredibly powerful advocacy groups in Washington. But finally, when you see stories like that come out, not just in the Wall Street Journal, but the New York Times, and even the Boston Herald, I believe, had a story. This is not just one side of the aisle. This is multiple sides of the aisle starting to understand the abuses of 340B. And we had a story that we had, you know, recently where one of the 340B hospitals in our region basically turned down a patient. They make them go through, you know, the patient was admitted and had probable hepatocellular carcinoma. And you see in the charts, it literally says their most important problem is their lack of insurance. And this is a 340B hospital. And that patient ends up getting a $14,000 bill on behalf of his wife. And at the end of the day, can't get care there, is afraid to go back to the doctor because afraid with how much money they're going to ask for, because they really make you go through so many different steps before they will allow you to get through that process. So finally, I got the call from the primary care physician. Can you take care of this patient? And this happens frequently, that we're the ones that actually pick this up in the community, which is okay, but we don't have 340B, right. But it's a flawed program.
Yeah. So I hopefully I'm not divulging too much information, but one thing that you had mentioned on a call that I thought was absolutely fascinating, which is, and make sure I get this right, but it's a story that I will routinely recall, that when your daughter brought her boyfriend home, that your daughter said, what did your daughter say?
So my son, no, yeah, my son.
Oh, your son. Okay, I'm sorry.
You know, yeah, I think I said this on a U.S. Oncology when I was giving a talk on 340B. I often joke around that probably on my tombstone after 120, it will say that I have fought 340B my entire life. But my son actually brought home a girlfriend, and basically my son said, don't start talking to him about 340B. And I said, we'll leave that for the third or fourth time right. I talked to you. But yeah, 340B is a very important issue in
our house.
That's great.
So JC, can you give us a rundown on what's happening in Washington, D.C.? How are policymakers handling all of this increased exposure around 340B? Yeah. And all of these efforts to reform the program.
Yeah, I think there's definitely more of an appetite for looking at the 340B program. I think there's definitely, like Dr. Chasky's mentioned, a lot more impacts to practices that they're seeing, that funds really aren't really sure where they're going, how it's really being implemented. So Congress is definitely keeping an eye on this now. I think earlier this month, we actually just saw the new alliance bill come out, the Alliance to Save America's 340B program, which was a partnership with the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America and the National Association of Community Health Centers, which is really an alliance trying to put more exposure on the 340B, pushing for more transparency, pushing for more understanding of how exactly the program is being utilized today. And I think there's really great efforts, like from Dr. Chasky and many advocates, trying to show exactly how this is impacting community oncology and the community practices. And really, Congress is really being told, you know, this isn't exactly the way it's been done. It's been a 30-year program, and it's really strayed a lot from the original purpose.
Yeah, I think that's a key element. I'm really curious how much they lean into trying to dig into the original intent of the program.
Yeah.
Make sure that the program is following the original intent, and then what reforms they need to enact to get it back to the original intent. Okay, so thank you very much, Dr. Chesky, for joining us. I am curious if you can give us, as we close out the segment, what are you looking forward to most about the rest of the conference? We still have almost a full day ahead of us, day and a half. What are you looking forward to the most?
I'm looking to hear more about future directions of COA. I think something that Barbara McEnany brought up, you know, she talked about the last 20 years, and we've always talked about independent medical oncology practices. But the truth is that, you know, when you look at U.S. oncology practices and beyond, many of us are starting to work with and bring in other specialties into our practice. Breast surgery, GYN oncology, colorectal surgery, surgical oncology is the obvious, but even pulmonary, because what we talked about on the panel today is pulmonary is at high risk to be bought out by the hospitals, because there's no private equity group that wants to buy pulmonary, and it's a tough type of practice to stay in with, because on your own, because it's based on E&M codes, unless you have PSAs with hospitals for the critical care. Those practices are at very high risk for going to the hospital, and then it puts you at risk for losing an important segment of your practice, the lung cancer. So that whole direction of stepping even beyond medical oncology, I think, is an important piece.
That's a great call out. Thanks for that. Allison, what do you think? You talk to me about some of the sessions that you see coming up. What do you think are the most important ones for COA, or just your overall hopes for the rest of the conference?
Oh man, I think I'm just really, really excited to see just kind of like the diversity of issues that everything is diving into, and especially some of the complexity and interweaving how different federal and state policies come together. Policies, especially like we've been discussing 340B in this discussion, traditionally a very federal topic. If we're talking about 340B at the state level, traditionally we haven't talked about 340B, however, regulated and unregulated spaces and how different hospitals are set up and how they interact with unregulated spaces and physicians' offices, this has now become a really important topic the state level, and how a physician's office can interact with that, and how they can collaborate, how they refer to each other, how different state levels can analyze investments in different hospitals. This is going to be a really interesting topic for COA moving forward, and just all the different organizations and agencies around all of the oncology organizations out there. I think there's so much, and we can all find our space.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
I was going to say, I definitely think it's gives everybody the opportunity to sort of sync up on messaging and really just see what exactly is out there. What are people experiencing? How do we voice that and form one unified message? And to Allison's point, what are each key touch points where each of our perspectives were able to speak to us to a specific topic on that and form that entire full story? Because I think especially at the federal level, members of Congress, they need to hear from our physicians, they need to hear from the practices to share their perspective and give that education and how these 340B programs are impacting them. Because automatically when they hear 340B and you talk to staff who are in this issues, they automatically think, okay, this is hospital related. But they don't really see exactly the full picture that we're able to provide of how it's impacting the network. So I think it's really great that you guys are doing that advocacy and giving us this forum to sort of build that message.
Right.
You know, I'll build on that a little bit, because I think you touched on something that I think is important, which is the congressional staff know. They immediately make the correlation between 340B and a hospital. And the reason that that's so important is because it was only about 3 or 4 years ago when, if you went into a member of Congress's office to talk about the impacts of 340B, you had to spend 15 to 20 minutes describing the program. We're past that hurdle, which is good. And it's largely due to efforts like you and your practice and what's happening with the Wall Street Journal and New York Times. All of these are building that momentum for reform. So,
yeah.
Dr. Chesky, thanks for joining us. Thanks for all you do for community oncology. Thanks for a great start to COA, and we look forward to the rest of the conference.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
I appreciate it. Take care.
You are listening to The Link, an interactive podcast hosted by public policy experts at the U.S. Oncology Network. Your link to the policy that matters most.
We have decided that we get to grill our very own Ryan Soult. Ryan, welcome to the team.
Thank you. That's a great introduction.
I think hazing is probably illegal, so maybe we won't use the word hazing. But what's a... Can somebody look up a thesaurus word?
Celebrating. Finish. It is celebrating. We are celebrating
welcoming.
We are going to celebrate the welcoming of Ryan Soule. Ryan, welcome
Thank you.
To the team. Welcome Thank to the podcast. Can you give us a little background? Give us your elevator speech introduction.
Sure. So joined the team in December of 2022, having previously spent the last 5 years in Washington, D.C., doing lobbying for transportation-related companies, and then also working at the National Governors Association, originally from Michigan, born and raised, and went to Michigan State, so I'm a proud Spartan. And they're actually playing basketball tonight in the tournament, so we may have to sneak off around 6.
Okay. I'm all for the one.
Yeah, so.
Do you have them going all the way?
I have them winning tonight.
And then, what are they, a 6 seed, 9 seed?
7.
7 seed.
Yeah.
He's a fan, but a realist.
That's right.
I am.
Do you have a pick?
To win?
To win it all.
Well, it was Kansas, and then they lost in the second round. So
let's do a redo now with the Sweet 16 left. Who do you got?
To win, probably Houston or Arkansas. I'm going to Arkansas as like a sleeper.
I like it. Yeah. I like it. If you were in Vegas, I think you'd get pretty good odds on that.
Yeah. Hey, you can gamble in Colorado.
Oh, or Colorado.
Edit that out.
Or Colorado. So, yeah, I'm excited. I am, as some of you know, I am a proud University of Houston alumni.
Yeah.
And we don't get much to cheer for, but this year I've been cheering, so I'm excited about it. It'll be fun.
Yeah, no, it's so yeah, we'll have to sneak away. But yeah, I'm based out of Denver now, which is great because covering all the Western practices for state government relations, it allows me to be pretty mobile and get to wherever I need to be pretty easily. So yeah, so a new resident of Denver, moved out there with my fiance and 2 dogs. And so we're enjoying the Denver lifestyle.
That's awesome.
The pace is a lot different than D.C. I was telling JC was like, we were talking about dry cleaning last night, how many times you have to dry clean the suits. And I was like, well, just move to Denver, and then you only have to wear a suit once or twice a week.
Yeah. So
Congress is back in session. Everything's moving fast. You gotta suit up most days now to go to the Hill.
So, yeah, no, it's been great to join the team, though. It's been a lot of a big learning curve, learning the network and all the priorities, but it's been fulfilling and fun. I feel like we're on the right side of a lot of the issues, or all the issues.
Absolutely. I will tell you, this is something that podcast listeners might not get the same level of appreciation, but you have been very well received by the practices. We were just joined by Glenn Belaski, the executive director of RMCC, and I was at dinner with him last night, and he was singing your praises as well. So you've only been on board for a short time, but it is clear that you dove in headfirst. So thank you, and we look forward to
tell us your region again.
So it's pretty much everything west of the Mississippi, including Illinois. So Oregon, California, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, Nevada, Missouri, Illinois, and Minnesota.
Awesome.
So,
and Allison, you cover the other side. Is there ever a period when you guys like arm wrestle over a state? Are you like Minnesota or something?
Oh no, I am. She can totally willing to let him take as many states as he wants.
It's Illinois.
He can have Illinois. No.
No offense to our Illinois listener.
No. No offense to
our Illinois listener.
No. So for listeners who've not met me before, I, in a previous life, I worked pretty extensively, I guess, on the ground in all 50 states. So my background is pretty exclusively in oncology state policy. I have a love for state legislatures. And so it's not really about the state themselves. I don't really know anything about sports, so I have no preference about any sort of like Michigan versus Ohio scenario there. It's more about, I really don't like the legislature rules in Illinois. I dislike the way they do amendments. And so I'm really happy that I don't have to follow that procedure. And so anytime that I can have Ryan read those amendments for me, I love that. Same goes with Wisconsin. I don't really like the way that Wisconsin writes their bills, so I'm so happy that he gets to read those.
That is, I think that might be the wonkiest answer to your preference of states. That's pretty impressive. Has that ever come up in conversation when you meet somebody from Illinois and you're like, hey, it's really nice to meet you, but I've got a bone to pick with the process.
Your state legislature.
That's right.
You know, it's for the nerdiest of nerdy state legislative people, we have these conversations all the time. And honestly, I had the funniest conversation yesterday with somebody else from the US Oncology Network. I had sent him an Indiana bill, and he said, "Allison, I read that bill 4 times, and I had no idea what it means." And I said, "Good, because I read it 4 times too, and I was hoping you could tell me."
Are you going to name names? Are we naming names here? No, I'm just kidding. Unless you want to.
I think 4 or 5 of us looked at it, and we all kind of agreed this is what it means. Yes, we agree this is what it means.
I mean, sometimes it takes teamwork, because sometimes the wording of this is particularly done for that specific reason. And
so anytime any of you listeners hear me say I don't like a state, it is never because I don't like your team or I don't like you. It is because I cannot read that bill.
Right. If you hear me saying I don't like your state, then it is because of your team. And we're talking about Ohio.
Okay.
It's complete opposite.
Ryan, you came to us from the National Governors Association. They routinely have large meetings that have a number of attendees, a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. But this is a big meeting. This is your first time at COA. We've said a couple of times that we understand that they're expecting over 1,900 people here. What are your first thoughts on COA this year?
It is a big conference, but just being part of some of the conversations and the networking opportunities, it's been really great to see doctors able to come together and just share ideas and what they're doing and their different practices, because I think a lot of them face the same issues, and just being able to work those out and share best practices is I think what a cornerstone of this conference is, but also going back to the National Governors Association is what that association is built upon, and is a group of bipartisan governors coming together to share best practices. So I think that's probably the common theme of both conferences.
Definitely agree. I mean, so Ben mentioned we're up to like around 1,900. I was as of this morning, I was around 700 that I've met. I'm now at 900. I don't know if you're going to be able to top me. I'm trying to get all 19, hoping to meet everybody face to face. But we'll see. What are your thoughts, Angela?
And for listeners, our Vice President Ben Jones just stepped out and I stepped in, but I am our Director of Government Relations. I oversee our state team, and I would have to say that I have never been more excited to have Ryan and Allison on the team. You guys have, I know Ben mentioned earlier, Ryan, you've been such an asset for only being here for a few months. And Allison, you've done some incredible things just in the 2 years that you've been a part of our team. And so I just feel very grateful to have you guys. There are a lot of people here. There are a lot of people here, and the focus has been on policy, advocacy. How do you guys feel about the discussion kind of revolving around what we do every day?
Honestly, I am so excited. Number one, it's very validating to hear that what we do is making a difference, making change, and getting other people who are in the trenches all the time excited as well. It's validating to hear that what we think is important, you also find important, and that we're on the right track. Because if we had spent kind of all of last year in an echo chamber thinking we were doing the most important thing and came to COA and nobody else was talking about it, I think my heart would break. Yeah.
And I think one thing to note, too, is that it's not necessarily, you know, getting a piece of legislation through the state legislature or, you know, getting some sort of amendment in immediately, but it's always about, you know, making the steps to get something done. And I think that is something particularly of importance, too, that goes to the work that you all do, especially at the states, and getting in touch with the practices and getting that through is just, you know, getting the steps forward to make some of those changes.
Yeah, we've made some huge strides, a huge step forward on a lot of these issues that we've been working on for years. You just can't walk into a Capitol you know, file a bill and expect it to pass. I mean, it's happened.
Although Allison has done that.
Well, I was going to say, we've been successful, but but even so, on our issues, it's taken a little bit of groundwork. You know, our big, you know, win that we would consider in Virginia, for example, it's a huge step forward, but we still have a lot of work. Do you want to talk a little bit about what's happening there?
I would love to talk about that. And I think one of the reasons, before we even get into it, one of the reasons for context why I think this is a huge win is because what this does, it's not just a win for today, a win for this year. This is going to set the course for if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, anyone else on our team, anyone else in the future at the U.S. Oncology Network, or for that matter.
I don't like where this conversation's going.
No, but
it's
like
a dark turn.
Truly, anyone in community oncology could step in and say, this is important to me, and take it and run with it. So basically, House Bill 2200 from this session, we initially filed it.
Which state?
In Virginia. We filed it with our primary sponsor being Chair Delegate Roxanne Robinson. She is the chair of the House Committee on Finance. And what the bill had originally intended to do was to eliminate business, professional, and occupational licensure taxes at the county and municipal level for anti-cancer drugs that were administered to Medicare, Medicaid, and TRICARE patients. So I know that's a mouthful, but pretty much for the laymen who do not live in Virginia, B-poll tax, that is the short term for the tax that I just discussed.
Real hot topic.
That is a real hot topic. That is a gross receipts tax. So that is, gross receipts would be the reimbursements that your practice is receiving from those government payers for any drug that is, or any anti-cancer drug. So not just chemotherapy, but any of the supportive care anti-cancer drugs infused in the community oncology setting. And so even if that drug was reimbursed below the acquisition cost, we were paying gross receipts tax on it. And there were different rates based on different localities. And in Virginia, each locality could set their own rate, and they were very high rates in some localities. So it was incumbent upon us to kind of figure out what each rate was in each locality, and we either had to make the decision, do we request flexibility to go locality to locality, or do we just ask the legislature to waive this tax for these government payers, full stop. For context, this tax has not been touched in over 25 years. They've tried, everybody hates it, but nobody knows what to do about it. And so instead of doing anything about it, House Finance kind of just stalled. And any of these sort of tax bills need to start in the House by law in Virginia. So we knew we had an uphill battle, but we kind of just pounded the pavement and we went door to door. We met with every single member of the House Finance Committee. We made our case. We ended up getting it out of the one of the subcommittees unanimously. We got it out of the House Finance Committee without any amendments. We got it on the floor. We got it out of the House entirely without any amendments. But the issue came in the Senate. So the Senate has always been a little bit more wary of making any waves. And so currently, the governor of Virginia, it is one of his biggest priorities to make some tax flexibilities, but there's a lot of hesitancy in this current economic environment to be cutting back on taxes when everybody is struggling. So the Senate Finance Committee decided that they wanted to turn our bill into a study that would include discussing flexibility around gross receipts tax. So what actually happened is we created an interim study that would look into analyzing all of the issues that state and local policies in Virginia would create around reimbursement and operational challenges to patients on Medicare, Medicaid, and TRICARE accessing anti-cancer drugs in the community oncology space. So we will be meeting with the Virginia Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources, Medical Assistance, and we will be having this interim group with the Virginia Association of Counties, the Virginia Municipal League, the Virginia Association of Hematologists and Oncologists, the Virginia Medical Society, and also in concert with, I believe, there is the Department of Health will be supporting us. And we will meet over the summer, finishing our working group in October, on October 1st, and then we will submit a report on November 15th to the legislature with basically a laundry list of every policy that we would like to change in the state of Virginia in order to make sure that patients who are on Medicare, Medicaid, and TRICARE no longer have any issues in getting their meds in the community space.
Wow.
And that would include those flexibilities around vehicle taxes. It could also include workforce shortages. It could include Medicaid fee schedules that are reimbursing us underwater, anything under the sun. So we now have this ask that anyone who is practicing in Virginia in the community space, if you have an issue in your practice, reach out to us.
Yep.
Because
shedding a big light on all
we're accepting
these
requests. We get to send a honey-do list
the big,
to the legislature.
The big thing to highlight, though, is that we have a physician who's sitting on the task force, right?
Yes. Dr. Richard Ingram.
He will be joining us a little bit later this afternoon.
He will be joining us a little bit later this afternoon. He is the president of the Virginia Association of Hematologists and Oncologists. He has actually invited me to speak at their spring forum in May. So if you are a member of VAHO, please come to the spring forum May 11th to May 13th. We will be having a session where we will be workshopping different issues to include in this interim study. So you can share your voice, you can share your concerns, and you can get your ideas included in this working group.
Thanks for sharing that, Allison. I know there's a lot that we're doing on the state framework, and it's not easy when we cover such large territories, but issues like this that we're seeing go across the finish line are so huge. So we'll be back later on to talk to Dr. Ingram, and I bet we will follow up on this issue on that interview with him as well.
Yeah. So thank you Allison and Ryan for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you guys later out throughout this conference, and hopefully you can join us later.
Thank you for listening to the Link Podcast, your link to the legislature. For more information on healthcare policy and the U.S. Oncology Network, visit www.legislink.com.